that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. The Blue Room Theater in Chico is staging an original play appropriate for the Halloween season. It weaves several stories and poems by Master of the Macabre Edgar Allan Poe into one spellbinding narrative. On today's program, we'll take you to the Blue Room to hear from the four-member cast who also put together this play, A Heart Laid Bare, which is made up entirely of words by Edgar Allan Poe. Today, we'll also take you to the Memorial Museum of Sutter County in Yuba City, where we'll talk with the curator and one of the artists from the current exhibition, 100 Years of Heritage, the National Parks Service, which features works by a variety of artists depicting the natural beauty of lands overseen by the Parks Service. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
In Reading, the Axiom Repertory Theater ends its run of Into the Woods, the clever but dark musical mashup of classic fairy tales. Performances are at the Reading School of the Arts tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, with a final performance this Sunday at 2. The address for Reading School of the Arts, 955 Inspiration Way. Sunday night, get in the Halloween mood when Reading's Cascade Theater shows the iconic 1931 movie Frankenstein, starring Boris Karloff. The party kicks off at 6 o'clock with live music, dancing, and a costume contest. The film starts at 7. Closing tomorrow at the Orland Art Center, The Magnificent Horse, an exhibit devoted to the beauty, grace, and importance of the equine species. Saturday's the final day to see it, and gallery hours are 1 to 6. In Chico tomorrow evening, the Symphonic Winds, a talented group of university students, play pieces dedicated to the Earth's nearest neighbor. Starting at 7:30, hear Music for the Moon at Chico State's Harlan Adams Theater. Then on Sunday, the Verona Quartet appears at the Zing Recital Hall on the CSU campus for an afternoon of pieces by Haydn, Mendelssohn, and Beethoven. These young string musicians from the Juilliard School of Music take the stage day after tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Next Thursday, get ready to have your funny bone tickled during an evening of improv comedy when Who's Live Anyway comes to Laxon Auditorium at CSU Chico. The off-the-cuff antics start at 7:30. At the university's Janet Turner Print Museum, visit the exhibit Wide Open Spaces, Janet Turner Prints with photos of the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve. The Turners open 11 to 4, Monday through Saturday. This is the final weekend of the Open Studios Art Tour. You can pick up a guidebook and studio map at the Chico Arts Center. The Art Center's open tomorrow and Sunday from noon to 4. Then, in Chico, Paradise, and Oroville tomorrow and Sunday, you can visit artists in their own workspaces. Thursday, 1078 Gallery opens the exhibit A Collecting Place, featuring lithographs, silk screens, and cyanotypes created by printmaker Susanna Crum. 1078's hours, 12:30 to 5:30, Thursday through Saturday. At the James Snidel Gallery, paintings by Dolores Mitchell, The exhibit Dreaming of San Francisco showcases Mitchell's bold and colorful jazz-influenced imagery. The Snidel Gallery is a grand Victorian house on 4th Street, across from Chico City Hall. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. Today is the birthday of British novelist Evelyn Waugh. He expressed his belief that art is the symbol of the two noblest human efforts, to construct and to refrain from destruction.
Take you now, if you dare, to the Blue Room Theater in Chico. The current production at the Blue Room is perfect for the Halloween season. A Heart Laid Bare is a new play that takes famous stories and poems by Edgar Allan Poe and combines them into one spellbinding narrative. Let's hear from the cast, four performers who also created the show. Now we're talking with Joe Hilsey at the Blue Room Theater. So tell me about the particular kind of terror that the impetus of this show came out of.
Well, actually, it was a terror that this show came out of. We were scheduled to do another show, and actually we had started rehearsals. We had a couple of actors who just couldn't do it. They had to drop out, and we couldn't recast the show. And so we knew we had a deadline. We had a show we had to do that we didn't have a cast for. And so it was absolute terror of what are we going to do? And so Amber and I had a conversation, and I believe it was her idea. So, well, let's just, you know, it's October. Let's do a Edgar Allan Poe kind of thing. And so we talked about it for quite a while, and that's where the idea came from, was let's do some type of... We didn't want to do just a now we're going to do this poem, now we're going to do this scene, now we're going to do this story. And that would be a little bit too staid. And so we did come up with the idea pretty quickly about we wanted to see if there was any way that we can conflate, you know, many, many of the different tales and poems into a single sort of, you know, narrative. And so
I have to say, you cut a very compelling figure as Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh.
Did you realize that you look like Edgar Allan Poe?
Not initially, no. No, not. It wasn't until, you know, my hair was rather kind of long and unruly and I wanted to cut it. And Amber's like, don't, because you kind of looks like Edgar Allan Poe. And, you know, growing the mustache out. And so, and just sort of my, my pallor being so ghastly to begin with, I think helps quite a bit as well. Is that I guess so, yeah.
What do you feel in common with Poe as a spirit?
His love of words. I certainly have a love of words. It's why I'm drawn to theater. It's why I've been doing theater my entire life, why I'm drawn to Shakespeare. And Poe, who I think is someone who demands attention to the language and attention to the words and a love of words.
Well, in this play, A Heart Laid Bare, you have the honor of doing the poem The Raven.
The poem itself has long, long been one of my all-time favorites, as it has been for many, many people. I've read a couple of biographies of Poe, and he was so proud of that poem. When he wrote it, he would go to people and he would say, I've written the best thing that's ever been written before. But he was also quite candid in saying that he was just trying to write something popular. He was looking around him at the different elements that made a popular poem and trying to bring all of those and conflate all of those elements into a single poem that would create something popular, because he was trying to make some money as well. But he did create something that I think is just an absolute distillation of, nostalgia, melancholy, sadness, yearning, and this earnest sort of desire to see something that has passed and something that is no longer in your grasp. That sense of he wants it so badly, and this stupid bird that comes in and tells him that he's never, ever going to see it again. It's that nostalgic feeling everyone has experienced, like in the poem, whether it's someone who's passed away, who was the love of your life, who you're never going to see. That nostalgia of wanting something in the past, but I cannot have it. It's going to happen nevermore. That he really was able to capture so beautifully that everyone can relate to it. And I think that's why, to this day, 150 years later, we're still saying, wow, that's one of the greater American poems that's ever been written. When Amber and I were putting this together, we realized and we really kind of hit upon all of those themes that come up in many of his works, the sensitivity to sounds and light, which comes up in Telltale Heart. You know, he has hearing that's so sensitive that can hear the old man's heartbeat as he's sitting in the dark room. But also Roderick Usher talks about the same thing, as he can hear his sister's heartbeat, who they've entombed, but she's not actually dead, and he hears her. And so all of these things come up over and over again, which we've tried to put into this play, all of these echoes that sort of cascade over and over and over again. It was really quite a lot of fun in putting it together.
You're calling this play A Heart Laid Bare. Tell me where you got the title from.
Well, I'd read it in a biography. Poe is attributed as saying that if someone wanted to truly change the world, they would just have to write a slim book entitled A Heart Laid Bare, and then follow through on that promise. He was just saying, if somebody talked openly and candidly about what it is to be human, about everything that happens emotionally, and not hide it, not filter it, if somebody was brave enough to do that, it would change the course of the world. Well, it worked on many different levels. It's the heart laid bare, your heart, your emotions. But also, you know, it's October, and it's Poe, and it's gruesome. We imagine just a heart that has been laid bare as well. And so it worked on a few different levels.
How do you tread this line between what an audience wants from Poe, which is this kind of overwrought madness and, you know, creepiness, and also the deeper, sophisticated, poetic side of Poe?
Even though what he had in his heart was dark, he was able to communicate it in such a humanistic way that everyone who sees it and everyone who reads it says, yeah, I have that too. It might be at the darkest points in my life when I have that, but I have that. And there's an affinity. There's a connection to that darker side, you know, that melancholy, that gloom, that depression that might cloud over us all the time, that is dark, but it's also rich and it's beautiful. And I think people do appreciate they have that in themselves. And Poe certainly had it in spades. Thankfully, he had the artistic capability to be able to communicate that in a way that no one has before or since.
Now we're talking with Amber Miller. You're the one that first came up with the idea to do Edgar Allan Poe at the Blue Room Theater for the Halloween season here.
We had a cancellation, and so we're thinking about what to do, and Joe and I were in our kitchen where we discuss a lot of stuff, having a little cocktail. I was like, you know, it's October, Poe's rad, we should just do a Poe show. And he liked the idea, and we thought about it, had another cocktail, and so we're like, yeah, let's do it. So we didn't have a moment to spare.
When did you decide to have it all the words of Poe with nothing else, and yet try to weave it into one continuous story?
We both wanted to have all Poe. That was never up for debate, but it was how to do it. Neither one of us wanted to do like a reading or separate little acts. So that was Joe's vision, just to do like one solid piece. We weren't sure at first how to do that, but that Friday, Joe read House of Usher, and we saw that in the House of Usher, Roderick would read a book or he'd recite something. That's where the idea came up of like, well, instead of Sir Lancelot's King Arthur stuff, which is one of the stories, let's just insert Poe. And so that's when we got the idea of nesting Poe pieces.
I'm here at the Blue Room Theater talking to the cast and the creators of A Heart Laid Bare. And we now have Julia Rauter.
What's it like being the doomed dead heroine of a couple of these stories?
It can be very exhausting, but I love doing Poe because the words are so important. I love Poe for his quality of writing and meter, and that you really have to bring it.
What did you find most challenging doing this piece that wove together so many different poems and stories into one linked narrative?
That you have to find a connection between all these stories that are actually not connected. So you're a character in one story, then you become a character in another story, and then you're another character in a different story, and then you're the same character from the very first story again. I think the most challenging part of this production was to try and just find meaning in connecting them in the way that this play had been adapted.
I'm here with Rob Wilson, who is one of the quartet of performer creators of the Edgar Allan Poe play that's at the Blue Room Theater. Rob, I think doing Poe requires you to get into the spirit of Poe, which is overwrought. It's kind of super saturated. It's obsessive. So what was it like getting into that state of madness almost and still walk the line where you're still somehow tied to the naturalistic tendencies that make our play seem real?
I think that all of us these days have our obsessions, things that we're personally drawn towards, things that we may not necessarily admit to our friends, but there are the things which drive us. There are the things which create huge amounts of energy in our life. And I think Poe really grasps onto that very well. So to bring that to the stage and to not take it to a point where it goes over where you can really relate to it, it's a difficult thing to put together that sort of through line and not spring you out of it because it's too big, it's too overwrought, it's too much. Specifically for me and this character that I do in The Telltale Heart, who is obviously a person that has gone over the edge, you know, it draws us to that. It shows us how close we all are to that point. In putting this show together, you know, we want to bring that to it, but, you know, we don't want to take it over that step because then it becomes a sort of, this is a comedy of that. No, it is this moment, it's the terror in the moment.
A Heart Laid Bare, an evening of Edgar Allan Poe, some great entertainment for the Halloween weekend or next weekend. And that's at the Blue Room Theater, and I've been talking with the people who created this piece and also perform it.
Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm going to be speaking about a historical and exquisite exhibition called 100 Years of Heritage, the National Park Service. It's an exhibition of landscape paintings and also sculptures and other kinds of art that is at the Community Memorial Museum of Sutter County in Yuba City. I'm speaking now to the director and curator, Jessica Haugen. Tell us about this exhibition and how it came to be.
The Community Memorial Museum has been doing history-themed art shows for 4 years now. I've only been with the museum a year. When I came in, I learned that we were doing art exhibits. I've worked at other museums that were history museums that also showcased art, and I think it's very important for the community to have access to local art. So I loved the idea. However, not being from the area, I don't have very many connections in the art world here yet. In the past, we've had guest curators for these shows, so I decided to continue that tradition, and I asked Don Payne, fantastic local artist who has been featured in all of our previous art exhibits, if he would do it, and luckily for me, he said yes.
And luckily, he's sitting right next to you.
I'm very enthusiastic about the Park Service and showing art locally. I'm really connected to the parks and the Park Service. My art is themed a lot of landscapes and wildlife. I'm just really excited about the show.
What kinds of images are there? I'm remembering one of yours, a very fantastic waterfall.
I was inspired by what they call the Fire Falls in Yosemite Valley. I did a little background to find out what inspired the Fire Falls, which is actually pushing hot coals off of Glacier Point. And I found out that Horsetail Falls of El Capitan was the inspiration for that. I made a trip up there to find out about it and found out that it only happens a couple weeks a year, which is in February, that the sun is just right and is shining through. The sun glistens off of the snow melt from El Capitan, and it creates what looks like fire falls. It actually looks like it's on fire. That's where the inspiration came from for that.
Well, I was particularly struck by that painting and that you used a very vertical and very narrow format for it.
I was trying to create the feeling of height and the depth of the valley. I took a trail and went up on the side so I could get that angle. I wanted to create the depth of the valley. That's the reason for the vertical format and the narrowness of the format.
There's such a wonderful history of artists, which would include painters, sculptors, photographers, being connected to the history of the park system. And of course, I'm thinking of Ansel Adams. But what other kinds of images do you have in this exhibit?
The only restrictions was that the subject matter had to be of the national parks or the Park Service or those locations which the Park Service manages. I went and handpicked the artist and I handpicked the art.
There are a few pieces of Half Dome, of course, since we're in California and nearly everyone's been to Yosemite at some point in their life. The nice part about the pieces of Half Dome, though, is that the styles used to represent it are all very different. And so even though the shapes are familiar, it's fantastic to see all these different points of view representing Half Dome. We have a couple of pieces that refer to the Grand Canyon, which, of course, is another spectacular park that many people make the trip to see in their lifetime. There's a lot of them that are from lesser known locations. As Don mentioned, the National Park Service manages a lot more than just the national parks. There's national seashores, national forests, there's national historic sites, and we opened it all up for the artists in this show. So we have a little bit of a representation from all those different kinds of places. It's a really nice mix.
The show has been open for a couple of weeks. You will have garnered some impressions of people's reactions.
People love the exhibit. They've been very, very positive in their response to it. For the most part, I think because so many people have been to national parks, we all have stories and memories and personal connections to them. And that, I think, enables people to really appreciate the art that much more. It's not just a pretty picture on the wall. It evokes a memory of a place they've actually been. Everyone who's come to see it has been just in love with the exhibit.
You know, your museum is a real gem, but it's one of those hidden gems, particularly for people coming from some distance, let's say Redding or Chico. Tell us a little bit about how people can get to your museum.
That is the trick. As you mentioned, we are a little hidden. We're right in the middle of Yuba City, and in fact, we're right next to 99, but there is no off-ramp on the road we're on, so you either have to take the exit before us or the exit after us, which I think is the easiest one, and that is for Colusa Highway. It's right in the middle of Yuba City. You can't miss it. If you turn right on that exit and then take your first right at the next light you come to, which is Civic Center, and then take your next right, which is Butte House Road, will be just a little ways up on your left right before the overpass.
Tell us a little bit about the rest of your museum. What else will people see when they visit you?
This exhibit is a temporary exhibit for us. It'll be up actually through November 13th. Our advertising says November 12th, but we are in a fantastic position in that we're able to expand our hours beginning November 1st. We will be open on Tuesdays and Sundays, so there will be a few extra days you can sneak in to see this exhibit. Outside of this exhibit, we have permanent exhibits that talk about the geology and formation of the area. We have exhibits on the Maidu Indians, the Native Americans who lived in the valley. We have exhibits on John Sutter, his name is all over the county, and agriculture in the valley. That's what most people are there for. And then we have something truly unique to a small county history museum, and that is our multicultural wing. Most museums, you won't see this sort of history in it, but we worked with local community groups, and we have an exhibit telling the history of all of the significant minority people in the area.
I would like to know a little bit more about the paintings.
Most of the paintings in this show are self-interpretive. They're not literal. There's a few very realistic paintings in there, but most of them are impressionistic type. Some of the artists, like Gregory Condos, very impressionistic and very well known. Kosakowski is more of an abstract impressionist. He has one that's very impressionistic and another one that's very abstract. So you get a good mixture. Some of mine are abstract and realism and impressionistic. Locally, there's Paul Bimke, who does unique style in what he calls painting in glass that's like a sand. And he does sand paintings and then puts this into a kiln and melts it, and the glass fuses together to where it actually does look a lot like paint, but it's not, it's glass. There's Frank Ordaz, who was an animator and involved with the original Star Wars movies, who now lives in Northern California. You've got something there for everybody.
Well, Jessica, can you give us a recap of the hours that you're open, the days?
Right now, we are open to the public Wednesday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 12 to 4. I mentioned we'll be able to expand our hours beginning November 1st, so we'll add Tuesdays, 9 to 5, and Sundays, 12 to 4, to that list. And you can find us at 1333 Butte House Road in Yuba City.
Well, thank you both, and what a wonderful way to celebrate 100 years of the parks.
That's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it any day, anytime after 3:30 on Friday, online at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts where you live. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.